Hey everybody, Bill here. Before we get into the episode today, I just want to take a second to thank you for listening and to encourage you to subscribe if you haven't and to leave us a comment on iTunes or Spotify or wherever you're listening. If you have any questions or comments or ideas for the podcast, we'd love for you to shoot us an email. The address is podcast@ghibc.com. You're listening to episode 5, and today my special guest is Pastor Doug Bosler of First Presbyterian Church of Aberdeen. We hope you enjoy. Welcome to God With Us, the podcast of Emmanuel Baptist Church in Hoquiam, Washington, hosted by Pastors Kent Gravely and Bill Brown. Well, welcome everyone back to the podcast. We are broadcasting today from my friend Doug Bosler's man cave, garage, study, office, work area. I wish I could take pictures and show everybody, but Doug is a local pastor in our area at Aberdeen First Presbyterian Church, and excited to talk to him about a few things today. So, Doug, thanks for coming on. How are you doing today?
I'm doing well. It's good to be here. And thanks for coming over and bringing your mobile setup here. Works out nicely.
Well, if I had places like this to visit all the time, I'd make it more mobile, but thanks for having me over. So is working in here one of the things you're kind of doing with the shutdown and everything?
It is, yeah. We had some projects around the house, and the garage was one of them, and it was on hold for a while, and now we have more time than we've had at home for a long time, so we're getting some of those projects done, and so it's still a work in process, but it's a nice little place for us to escape a little bit.
Well, that's really good. I would imagine when this is all over, there'll be kind of people who wish they had gotten some projects done and people who actually got some done. So good on you getting something done. So how you've got three kids. How's that been at home, just with the kids being home and out of school and stuff over the break?
Yeah, our kids have experienced it. They've rolled with it in all kinds of ways. They enjoy playing with each other. So I have a five-year-old, just newly five. Last week was Isaac's fifth birthday. So he had one of the corona birthdays where he doesn't actually get to have any parties or anything like that.
Right.
So we have a five-year-old, nine-year-old, and 12-year-old. Surprisingly, they get along well. And so they've been rolling with it. I think they do obviously miss friends. They miss sports a lot. They talk about Little League and fast pitch and some of the things they were looking forward to this spring. But in general, we've gotten into a pretty good routine. Schools seem to keep learning as they're moving. And, you know, we got some instruction, right, what they were looking for right away. And then more is rolled in week after week. And so our kids are in a fairly decent groove, and the weather has been amazing, so we've been able to be outside a lot in our backyard. And
yeah.
So as a family, I think we've been adjusting well.
That's good. And I want to talk to you more about just your pastoral ministry at Aberdeen First Pres. But before we get into that, even just preliminarily, as a church, how's it been going for your congregation not being able to? I assume you're not meeting on Sundays, not being able to meet. How's that been going for everybody?
Yeah, I think there was the general rush at the beginning. So we met, the last Sunday we met, I think was March 15th. We had a pretty low turnout that Sunday because it was already starting to ramp up. So we did the first couple of Sundays live on Facebook. We kept having troubles with our feed, and so for the last 3 weeks, we've recorded on Fridays. So we record it early and then put the video out on Sundays at 10. And then we tried to get a phone tree going right away and just making sure everybody's getting connected with one way or another. We've done, you know, some Zoom meetings, of course, with the leadership, and we've tried to do some congregational Zoom meetings just so people can see each other's faces. But in general, I think because, you know, where we are and how the virus hasn't, you know, impacted directly so much on the harbor in terms of people's health, I think there's a lot of people out there sort of wondering how they can help, where they can help, what they can do to help. So I think that's been the biggest challenge for our congregation, is people wondering what are they supposed to be doing right now?
Right.
I would say I think there's been a general sense of we miss being together more than we would have thought if this never happened. Like, there's this aspect of this was all of a sudden taken from us, and we never, I think for a lot of the congregation, we didn't think about it too much prior to now, about just what a wonderful blessing it is to be able to gather and have coffee with
right,
somebody.
Right.
And now that it's gone, I think there is that appreciation of the body together. So
yeah, that's so good. And before we kind of came on air, something we were talking about just before starting to hit record was how I feel like there's a lot of things we were assuming had to be done in person-to-person meetings that we're finding out, you know, we really can't handle this through an email or through a conference call. And other things we assumed that we just took for granted, that we said, yeah, well, I can just catch the stream. I can just touch base digitally. I can just listen to this sermon online. Whereas we may be finding now that some of these things actually need to be done in person.
So. Yeah, yeah, certainly.
So you're the pastor of Aberdeen First Presbyterian Church. First Presbyterian Church of Aberdeen probably is the proper way to say that. And I'm excited. One of the things I want to do in this podcast, Kent and I are both just passionate about the pastors in this area in Grace Harbor. Pastors are already a peculiar bunch, but those of us who have been called of God and chosen to serve here in Grace Harbor, we're peculiar among the peculiar, perhaps. But so, Doug, how long have you been the pastor at the Presbyterian Church there on Broadway in Aberdeen? And how did you come to be the pastor there?
Yeah. So March 1st was my 11th anniversary at First Presbyterian Church.
Nice.
So 11 years. I grew up in Chicago, suburbs of Chicago. My dad was a chaplain and dean of students at Trinity College then. It's Trinity University now because they have some graduate programs. But so I grew up in Chicago, went to college in California, Southern California, Santa Barbara. And then I went to seminary in Boston. The first church I went to was a non-denominational church in Montana, just outside of Yellowstone.
Cool.
So I was there for 3 years. It was supposed to be a one-year internship. Turned into a three-year call. It was kind of like a church plant. They were a summer congregation. They decided they wanted to try to be a, because it was in a resort area, and they decided they wanted to be a full-time church. And so we were experimenting with a one-year sort of being a church, and then that turned into 3 years. And
so someone should write a book on what the word internship means in church culture.
That's right. That's right.
Sorry, go ahead.
Yeah. And so after 3 years, it was clear that I was still just an internship, so we decided to move on. And so we began looking, and we were looking in the Midwest because that's where both Katie, my wife, and I's families are. But we said we'd be open to any congregation that that showed interest or wanted to do an interview. And so it ended up, we actually interviewed with three churches on the West Coast and no churches in the Midwest, oddly enough, even though that's where our search was. And we ended up feeling like Aberdeen was the right place. So we actually got called to a church in Rancho Cucamonga, California. So I think they boasted like 340 days of sunshine.
Right, and, right.
And it just didn't feel right, like the call there. And so we ended up saying yes to Aberdeen, which at least weather-wise, a little bit different.
The inverse, right? 340 days without sun.
Without sun. although this last month has been wonderful.
It has.
So yeah, that was the process. We weren't looking, we'd never heard of Aberdeen. We weren't looking in Washington in particular. We were actually looking Midwest, but we wanted to be open to where God wanted us to be. And through that interview process, we felt this was the right place. So, and it's been 11 years, so
wow,
something was right, I guess.
Well, absolutely. And I want to affirm your ministry just while we're talking about it. And so thankful for you and for your presence here, and just really resonate with you in a number of areas of interest. We were chatting earlier just about biblical theology and Christ-centeredness in interpretation of scripture, spiritual formation.
Yeah.
Maybe we can come back and have a chat about Dallas Willard sometime.
Yeah, that'd be great.
That'd be fun. I mean, one of the things that, so I grew up here in Grays Harbor. I actually grew up attending the church that I'm now serving, which is kind of a trip. But about 5 years ago, when we were called to come back here and to serve, one of the things that Kent Gravely had done was arrange for a lunch while we were just kind of candidating with some of the other area pastors. I don't know if you remember this lunch, but we were at the Chinese restaurant.
Yeah, I do. Yeah.
That moment was one of the things that drew me here to saying yes to coming back, maybe more than anything else, just to see the sweet fellowship among the other area pastors that exists here. It's not fair to say that pastoral fellowships don't exist anywhere else. That's not fair.
But right.
But I've found that what we have here in our community amongst the ministry leaders is it's pretty special. And I know that you've been a part of the Harbor Ministers Fellowship, and I was just wondering if you had any thoughts about just the unique camaraderie that we have. We have these meetings and like the Presbyterian guys there and the Baptist guys there and the Pentecostal guys there and the mainline, like the Lutheran guys there. And but the unity that exists there is striking, I guess.
Right. Yeah, no, I agree. And yeah, I think, what's been such a strong just influence and impact on my life, I think, has been that group. And just from the initial, you know, phone call that I got invited to the meeting when we first moved here, to relationships that have developed. And there's just this genuine sense of pastors caring for each other and wanting to see the church throughout the harbor thrive. And so just thinking off the top of my head, as soon as the coronavirus, COVID-19 hit, there were several pastors that called, basically just asking how things were going, how I was doing, how our church was responding, sharing ideas. And it wasn't, you know, it was just this outpouring of care. Mm-hmm. And so doing things like prayer meetings and prayer gatherings and Vespers services and all the various things that we do together, it's just been an amazing part of being here on the harbor. And, you know, we've had some good friends in that group that have moved recently.
Mm-hmm.
And
mm-hmm.
I've been reflecting on that the last couple of weeks, that there's people here that are part of other churches that have really sustained me. God has used them to sustain me in ministry here and have supported us. And we share the pulpit at each other's churches. And so it's certainly, I think there's creativity there. I think there's opportunity. You know, one church obviously has strengths in one area and another church in other areas, but the chance to work together has been just one of the sweet blessings of being a pastor here in Grays Harbor.
Yeah, I think each congregation feels, I think, responsible to its own people, and we want to serve the needs of the people that God's made us responsible for. But at the same time, something you were just saying, I don't feel here the need for from congregations to like to be a church that does everything for everybody and we don't need anybody else, but that there is a genuine partnership, I think, in the gospel work here that's pretty amazing, I guess.
Yeah.
So amongst all of the other interests, you have many interests.
Yeah.
one of them is that you write really well. You write pretty regularly. And I was kind of reflecting on some of the blogs that you had been publishing lately. You had talked quite a bit about facing the current coronavirus situation, particularly from the context of Romans chapter 12. And I wanted to chew on that with you a little bit, if that's all right with you. And, you know, one of the things that you talk about in one of your posts is the fact that, you know, God's equipped us each to play a different role in the purpose of the body of Christ. And there's a freedom that comes from that, I think is what you were talking about, that we don't have to have all of the gifts. We don't have to have all of the strengths, but to serve how we can and where we can. And that was really refreshing for me to read.
Yeah. it's interesting. We were in this series right before this happened, and the Romans 12 passage was, sort of the kickoff to that series. So, in late February, I had just preached on it, and, I was just trying to think of ways to encourage the congregation, and Romans 12 was fresh on my mind, and it just struck me as Romans 12 begins, do not, you know, be conformed to the patterns of this world, but be transformed by the renewing of your mind. Mm. And then it flows directly from that into the gifts of the church, and then just the way of the way of love, sort of, is how the chapter ends, in all the various ways that plays out. And it just struck me that, you know, the gifts that other people have, and that I have, and that the church as a whole has, is right, that they're there for, you know, such a time as this and any other time, right? That there is something obviously unique about what we're going through right now. But in another way, life always just comes at you all the time. And it's not an accident that we were given, you know, these gifts. And so even in the process of thinking through what can I do now, because as a pastor, my life typically revolves around being in a room with other human beings. Right. I was trying to think through what can I do, right, as a pastor now where that's taken away. And so obviously I can call people. Obviously we can still do a video of some kind on Sunday to live stream some sort of message. But I can also write. And so here's a way that I can use the gift that I have for this time, for the encouragement and equipping and upbuilding of the congregation. And I think that's true for pastors, and I think that's true for everyone else. And so even the idea, I'm writing much more in the last 5 weeks than I have in a long time, because of the uniqueness of the situation. And yet I see God as, you know, this is what I have to offer the church, at any time, and particularly at this time. I had a mentor of mine who sent an email out to a variety of to a list of his pastor friends early on, so mid March, and he was reading some Eugene Peterson, and he was just reflecting on it seems like everything has changed overnight, right? There were these huge major changes of schools out, the right. Restaurants closed, and then it was just this unraveling of life as we knew it. And he basically said, your call as a pastor is still to care for people, preach the word, and pray for your congregation. And it was just very freeing to hear that, like, regardless of the time that we're in or the experience that we're experiencing, we can still be who we are in that moment.
And that's so, so good. I think we have a propensity to listen to the voice of panic, basically. And we get so worked up with, oh, I've got to do this. I've got to adjust to this now. I have to become something else. I have to take on this new identity or something. And I appreciate the call to just to a solid foundation of being who we are in Christ and working from that foundation. One of the things you talk about is in that second verse about not being conformed to this world, but being transformed by the renewing of our minds. So, I mean, talk a little bit about how that works in terms of the messaging that we get from culture, from news media, from social media. How does that play out?
Yeah, I think there's a variety of ways, right? So there's, fear and panic that comes at you. There's certainly an overflow of information that constantly is sort of hitting us left and right. And I think one of the things that transforming of our lives, the renewing of our minds is just being able to sort of step back and just kind of breathe and think about what hasn't changed, right? What isn't up for grabs? And the goodness of God is not up for grabs, right? Christ is still risen. We just celebrated Easter a couple of weeks ago. I remember, I think it was, I don't know if it's Ed Welch or David Pallison, but in one of their books, I can see it on the left-hand side of the book, but I can't remember which author it was. But he was describing this friend of his who had just been diagnosed with cancer. And his friend's response was immediately, on the one hand, it feels like everything just changed in a moment, right? Mm-hmm. And at the same time, nothing changed. He was still who he was. God was still who God was. And I think there's this opportunity just to remember that even as the circumstances around us are swirling, there's these promises of God that are not up for grabs, the way the current cultural trend is sort of what's going to happen, right? That's always the question. What's next?
Right.
Some of those questions are valid, right? But there's a lot that's just not any different than it was 6 weeks ago.
So do you think that there's an aspect of this event, this pandemic that is very, there's an opportunity for growth in God's church that, you know, a lot of the way that we think now about the world during this time maybe should be how we think about the world most of the time in terms of priorities and a realignment in terms of here is what is true. Here is the things that God controls, which is everything. Here are the things that I do not control, which is actually everything. Most things anyway.
Yeah. I mean, I think there's definitely a reality where we saw how quickly most of what we do with our lives unravel, right? And how shaky things really, really are, even when we assume they have a firm foundation. I mean, even, you know, you can point at things like the market, you can point at things like school closures, you can point at things like jobs. But even, I think the lie of busyness, right? That, that the more busy we are, the more we're actually, making it in life. And then all of a sudden, every single event that usually we filled our calendars with was gone. Right.
Right.
And so I think there was this very, I hate to say refreshing. That's one of the challenges of talking about the virus, because so many people are experiencing it in a variety of different ways. Right. Like, but there was a refreshing reminder, of just how quickly things can unravel, that we spend so much of our time and energy and resources and focus on, which hopefully inevitably calls us back to the one thing that isn't shaky, right? And God's goodness.
It's interesting, like in some of our small group fellowships that we used to be able to have in person, this idea would come up almost every week. We would talk about some principle from scripture, and there's just this struggle as 21st century Americans to really put ourselves in the place of, so let's say we're listening to the teaching of Jesus in the Sermon on the Mount, right? And he talks about, you know, hey, don't worry about your life and where your food's going to come from and where your clothes are going to come from. You don't need to worry about that. And for so many of us as 21st century Americans, we say, Jesus, I don't worry about that right. stuff. You don't have to worry about me worrying about that. I, for as many times as I've uttered the Lord's Prayer, I don't know how many times I've actually meant, give us this day our daily
right,
bread.
Right.
You know, I mean, hopefully there's like at least in principle, the realization in my mind, in my heart, in my soul that, you know, the only reason I have food to eat is because it's, you know, because God's provided it. Hopefully that's there. But at the same time, in these days, there's almost this fresh opportunity for our expression of the church in the Western church in the 21st century to really take some of these teachings and bring them home a little bit in a different way than we did before, maybe. I don't know.
Yeah. Yeah. There certainly seems to be a fresh hunger for the promises of God, right? Mm. Like you don't want to have to go through challenging times to be reminded of how grateful we should normally be, right?
But, right.
But there is certainly a constant need for a refocus and a restart. And so I think there's an element of that in this. Yeah.
So something that you were talking about in one of your blogs is in verse 3 of Romans 12. I'll just read Romans 12:3 here. Paul says, you know, right after he had talked about being a living sacrifice, offering our bodies a living sacrifice, this is our spiritual worship, not to be conformed by this world, but transformed by the renewal of our minds. And then in the next verse, he says, for by the grace given to me, I say to you, everyone among you, do not think of yourself more highly than you ought to think, but rather to think with sober judgment, each according to the measure of faith that God has assigned. And something you said there was Paul's call to humility here is really a call to sanity. And I think it was in view of just this pressure, particularly as pastors, I think in the context of what you were writing, but, you know, to become, all right, now we have to be an expert on infectious disease. Now we have to pull off a Hollywood level live stream each week and all of that. And what do you feel like Paul's calling us to there in verse 3?
Yeah, I think a couple of things. One is that just that idea of, you know, I really do believe God graces us for the experience that we're in. In terms of, I used to, and I still at times, you know, worry about, you know, what's going to happen to my kids or what if this, you know, happened to my wife and we got these. You know, we have to do this or you know what I mean? Playing the whole what if
right.
game.
Right.
And thinking that I would never be able to handle that or I would never be able to, God, do anything but that, right? Kind of game that our heads can play. And I think there's a reality where I don't need the grace to handle right, whatever my mind is worrying about, because that's not what's actually happening in my life.
Hmm.
And if that was going to happen, God would give me the grace to handle that. So I think there's an element of that, of humility there in the sense of I don't have to all of a sudden become this totally different person than God has made me to be. And then I think there's also just the freedom of being who you are, right? Instead of who you think you need to be. And so I think in this situation, right, there's this pressure, and I think there's some legitimacy to it of here's a chance for the church to rise up, right? And and care for people and be a calm presence in the storm that's happening around us. And I think there is a reality there. And at the same time, right, most of us are trying to figure out, you know, what life looks like at home with kids and working a job plus figuring out how to do that from a distance. And right. So there's this, I think, unnecessary pressure that we put on ourselves. I was talking to a friend the other day, and he said he hasn't slept as well as he has in the last month in like 10 years. And he's a pastor in Portland, and he said something to the effect like he always had this this gnawing feeling in the back of his mind that every other pastor knew what they were doing and he didn't. And so that was just his constant sort of feeling, right? And then this happens and he realizes no pastor has any clue what they're doing right now. And he's like, I'm back in the game, right? Like I don't have to, but there's an element to that where this is, I think we can still try to build this pressure that's not intended to be there. And what I love about Romans 12 is that I don't have to be these things that I'm not because other people in the church are.
Right.
And that's what God graces the church as a whole with, right? And so if you would have watched the first 2 weeks of our online streaming, right?
Or ours.
It's ridiculous, right? I'm trying to do this on my iPad. I've got it in selfie mode, which I didn't have any clue. Like the cameras were better on the other side of the iPad. It's like iPad 2 or one of the early versions, right? And so it's grainy and you can barely see it. And then the feed is in and out. And then 5 weeks later, we have people in our church who really know what they're doing. Right. Mm. And I don't have to do that. And so they've explained how all that works to me and set it up so that now we have a decent, you know, online thing. Right. So there's a freedom in knowing that God has gifted the church with the gifts that the church needs. And I don't have to have them all. And I think that's where the sanity comes in that Paul is talking about here, right? To think it with sober judgment about yourself. I think there's an element of, you know, don't be proud and arrogant, but there's also this, you don't have to be every part of the body.
Do you think there's a particular pressure or temptation to pastors particularly in that area?
I don't think the pressure to perform or do everything is particular to pastors. Mm. I think perhaps pastor it's unique in the sense that pastors put all of that in terms of church life on their own shoulders.
Yeah.
I don't think there's necessarily people in my congregation that feel the burden of preaching, for example, right? Like they don't put that weight on their shoulders in terms of church life. I think in terms of other areas of life, there is this always, I think, common reality of we wish we had that person's gifts, or we wish we could do it like that, or sing like they can sing. Or so I do think there's some elements of that's universal, but perhaps thinking that we have to have all the gifts might be unique to pastors.
It's just kind of processing this off the fly, but I think that's one of the things for all the blessings. We're thankful for the technology we have at our fingertips. We're able to connect with people now in a way that if this virus had happened 25 years ago, we would not be able to do the things that we're doing now. I mean, there's just no way. Along with that has come this constant, not just the constant on, like there's no off switch, but a constant awareness of everything that's going on all over the world. So if we're not careful, the expectation can become, well, you have to preach like John Piper, and your music team needs to sing like Hillsong, and the prayers need to be as deep as if they were written by Sinclair Ferguson, and like trying to put, you know, all these super gifted of God, for whose gifts we are very thankful to the church, all over the world. But then it somehow gets brought in to an individual context in a way that I think is not healthy. I wonder if that happens for, I know it's happening for our teens because of the social media, just the pressure of seeing everyone in the entire world and measuring yourself against everyone in the entire world. I know that's a pressure thing for, I hear a lot of moms talk about that,
right?
And the pressure of that.
Yeah. Yeah. You think of just, I mean, I don't necessarily want Facebook and social media to be filled with depressing moments at home, but they're always filled with like happy moments at home, right? They're always filled with the flowers outside, during the spring, and instead of, you know, what the backyard normally looks like and that kind of stuff. So I think there is that the smaller the world has become in that sense, the heightened sense of competition is there. I don't know if competition is the right word, but the feeling like you have to measure up and you're not.
But help me parse this out though too. So there's this tremendous freedom that comes from walking in who we are in Christ, the walking in the gifts that God calls us to walk in, not someone else's gifts, not someone else's calling. But the same, something that you wrote again that I really appreciate, you said, but this is a call to action, not a call to passivity at the same time. So can you kind of parse that out for me a little bit?
Yeah. I think the short of it is, I think God equips us and, you know, uses our entire life, to shape us, for the purpose of actually using the gifts we've been given,
right?
As opposed to, I think there's a sense where you can, it's interesting. I love the word, contentment, and I'm always feeling like contentment is elusive, and something I think we're called to, contentment. But I think it's also easy to hear that word contentment as a call to just sort of sit back, relax, carefree, not worry about what's going on. God can handle it over there with other people's gifts.
Which is like disengagement completely.
Yeah, disengagement. And you see Paul is as far from disengaged as you can possibly be when you read his letters. I mean, he says, so in you know, Philippians 4, the famous, you know, do not worry.
Right.
Right? But he actually uses that same word about how he worries all the time for his congregations.
Right.
In the positive sense of he cares deeply about these people, right? To the point where he's going to write them letters from all over the Roman Empire, just to check in and encourage them and correct them. And so there's a contentment that comes with who we are in Christ, but that's actually motivation to use those gifts, to use who we are for the body. And so those gifts are always there, not for our own sense of satisfaction or well-being, but for the equipping and the building up of the church. And so they belong to the rest of the congregation is sort of how Paul phrases it here in Romans 12. Our gifts aren't our own, right? We're individually members one of another. And so, you know, my foot is still part of, you know, my body, and my hand is still part of my body, and they belong to each other and they do things for each other. And so it'd be silly to say that, you know, my gifts are just my own, right? They're for the church, which assumes, implies action, right? It implies use of those gifts.
So it's, if you're the foot, then be the foot. And,
right.
And it's okay if you don't do the hand's things. Let the hand worry about being the hand. But that doesn't mean you stop being the foot.
Right.
Like we really walk in that.
And right.
That's good. That's very good. So as you kind of look around in your own church context, in the context of the larger church in Grace Harbor, I mean, what would you dream of seeing? What would you love to see God's people doing? How would you love to see us responding in these days?
I do think there's, you know, some practical ways of, you know, thinking through and then acting on what is the fact that we have a God who will neither forsake us nor abandon us. A God who was not surprised by the virus, a God who hasn't changed in the last 6 weeks, let alone the last six millennia, right? So what does that mean for how we respond, right? How we interact, how we engage with our family members, our congregation members, our neighbors, our online community. And so there is that element of what does it mean that God's still the same, you know, as he was 6 weeks ago.
Right.
And so how do we respond to that?
And may God give us grace as a church to be thinking through those things.
Right. Yeah, I think there's also an element for us to use this time to really ask some of those questions about, okay, we weren't expecting this to happen. And so what were we not prepared for as the church in terms of, you know, let's say we had to meet in smaller groups for a while. Are we ready to do that? Do we have leaders that are ready to lead those small groups? And I think obviously with anything, it points out strengths and it points out weaknesses. And I think asking both of those questions of where can we shine right now, and then also what does this reveal about where maybe our thinking over the years has become relaxed and comfortable and sloppy in ways that we didn't see or didn't anticipate prior to this.
Yeah, I was just trying to find a. I think I'm in like four different text threads with you from like group texts, and we get texts at all times of the day. But you had asked a question in one of these threads about just this decentralization perhaps of the church and the size of our meetings and things like that. I thought that was a really provoking question.
Yeah. I mean, I think it does bring to the question, you know, bring to the fore of what is, you know, discipleship in our congregations look like? And are we equipping people to study scripture, to lead small groups, to care for people, to do hospital visits, to the whole gamut of church life that, again, maybe going back to our conversation earlier, that pastors perhaps put on their shoulders either as a burden or as sort of a macho, I've got to do everything kind of sense, that the body was never intended to have one person do those things. And so I think decentralization in the sense of keeping Christ at the center, obviously,
right.
But not necessarily relying upon the things that, as we saw, basically in 4 days, were taken from us, right? And not in some sort of, you know, fearful, we've got to, you know, sort of, yeah, worry about, I mean, who knows what the future will hold other than the Lord, but
right.
But more in the sense of, I think certain things have been exposed that wouldn't have been if this didn't happen. I think Francis Chan, maybe in one of his books, said that he's the church that he was working with in San Francisco. He was trying to get these smaller groups of churches together, and basically the way he was approaching it was if he could take two elders from this church and drop them anywhere in the world, would they be able to plant a church? Right.
Right.
And these are small house churches of 10 to 15 people all throughout San Francisco. And just, I don't know if we have to go to that extreme, but the equipping of people to be the church regardless of the circumstances. Because as we've seen, circumstances can change pretty quickly.
Yeah.
And so how do we equip one another to be the church, come what may, right?
And I think when you talk about the centralization or the decentralization of the church, I don't want to give up the Lord's Day meeting of the people together, but at the same time, I think something that is being exposed is that's basically been the only thing in a lot of cases that we've been. And that's probably overly pessimistic to say, but I think it's true and fair to say that the weekend gathering has become so core, so central to the ministry of the church that when for however long of a period of time that, you know, becomes not feasible to do, the church has a really big question to answer about, like, what do we do now?
Yeah, I certainly love the Sunday morning gathering and thinking through these, you know, just the list of gifts that I've always had this sense that that we put way too much time and energy and focus on that one thing, and yet, you know, personally, that's where my gifts actually reside.
Right.
And so trying to work my way through that, like, what does that mean? What does that look like? I think, you know, we always want to be a church that's nimble and flexible, and certainly, you know, there's circumstances that happen throughout history that shakes things up pretty radically, but the mission of the church doesn't change. The Lord of the church doesn't change.
Right.
The purpose of the church doesn't change. And so I think a honing in on those things that can happen, whether, you know, we can gather exactly as we did before or not, or when we can do that again, is what I hope we're those are the types of things we're thinking about.
Yeah.
Seems different than let's panic because all this is happening, but it's perfectly fine to ask the question, what is this showing us that we need to work on, right?
Right. Well, Doug, I'm thankful for you and for your insights and for your teaching ministry, for your friendship, and thankful that you're here in the area and for your gifts. I've got some lightning round questions for you. Are you ready?
Let's do it.
This is the tough stuff. I'll start easy on you and we'll go from there.
Okay.
Best fast food hamburger anywhere.
Oh man.
And why is it In-N-Out?
That was not. So I would say In-N-Out. Although Humdinger, I think.
Yeah.
In Hoquiam is the closest thing to an In-N-Out burger that, although I don't know if Humdinger is fast food. I guess it's fast food.
Yeah, I mean, it's
walk-ins. It's a drive-in.
So there's a big fight in our area, or not a fight, a controversy in our area. Is it Lighthouse, Grizzly Den, or Humdinger? I mean, people are pretty adamant about their positions.
I would say Humdinger.
Humdinger, so okay.
They get my vote.
There you go. Would you rather win VIP tickets to the NCAA Finals, Game 7 of the World Series, the Super Bowl, or some other sporting event I didn't mention, like Wimbledon or WrestleMania or something?
I think I'd have to go with Game 7 of the World Series.
Wow. Yeah. Because I know you're a big Final Four. Like,
I am,
you're a big
I'm a big college basketball
person.
Big college basketball guy. But, yeah, I baseball, I think, still. It's interesting. Baseball was definitely the sport that I was worst at as an athlete. But it's been the one that I've kept up with as an adult in terms of watching the most. So, but it'd be hard to beat a Final Four as well. I don't know. That's a tough one.
It is. It's funny. I'm the exact same way. I love watching Major League Baseball. It's the only sport I never tried. Like, I never played T-ball or Little League or anything like that. But I don't know.
I actually love listening to it. So I get the MLB radio subscription, mm-hmm. which is much cheaper than the MLB TV subscription.
That's true.
But I do it because I love to listen to baseball and the announcers. And it's great because you can listen to the first two innings and then take a nap and you come back and it's still going on. So
So you've been, have you been a Cubs fan like all your life?
Oh yeah, yeah. Okay. I was born and raised a Cubs fan.
Okay. Yeah. What dead theologian, Jesus and the apostles don't count, what dead theologian would you want to have 20-minute conversation with?
Wow, that's a good question. I don't know if C.S. Lewis counts as a theologian. That would be...
I think he counts. I think he counts.
He certainly writes theology.
Yeah.
Oh, I'll say C.S. Lewis.
Okay.
Well, no, I mean, he does literature and other things.
Yeah, that's true.
He was a popular theologian, I guess.
Yeah, and...
Not trained, necessarily.
So that actually leads me into my last one. Narnia or Middle Earth?
Oh, man. So I'm rereading Narnia right now with the kids. But if I had to choose, I think I would go with Middle Earth.
So you've read the Lord of the Rings
I have.
Books.
Yeah. Yeah. As a kid, I reread The Hobbit over and over and over and over again. And then I didn't actually get to the Lord of the Rings until the movies started coming out. Then I read them. But I think Tolkien's just the depth of his understanding of goodness and evil and courage and sacrifice and the fact that it's a little tiny hobbit that saves the day and just the his grasp of the conflict that we are in is just so deep and fun at the same time. And I think obviously Lewis has that, but and maybe Lewis is much more fun to read, but I'd have to go with Lord of the Rings if I had to choose.
Okay. No, that's good. So, by way of segue, you are reading the Narnia books. You're reading them out loud online.
Yeah.
On your Facebook page.
So the first weekend the schools closed, I was trying to think of what we could do. I thought I could read aloud. I love to read. My kids love to hear me read. And so... thought I could do that online, so I sent an email to the C.S. Lewis company, because they're still, it's not public domain yet.
Right.
So I was worried about copyright, and they said as long as I do it live without posting or copying or recording the readings, they were happy with it during the school closures. So we've been doing that. We're on the third book now. Every night at 7:30, we're reading. So we're on Voyage of the Dawn Treader. I do two chapters a night, and so we usually make it through a book every week and a half or so.
So Magician's Nephew is not the first book in your
line
of thinking?
I don't think so. No, okay. I do not think so.
Okay. No, there's a chronological, canonical conflict there that causes some debate.
Yeah.
So anyone who knows Doug, on Facebook, you can find him doing that. He's doing live readings in the evenings, and then... your website for your church is aberdeenpress.com, P-R-E-S after Aberdeen.
.org.
No, .org. .org. Yep. Yeah. aberdeenpress.org. And there you can also find, aside from information about the church, Pastor Doug blogs there, and you can read these very helpful articles that he's been sharing. So... Doug, again, thankful for you and for your ministry. Thanks for taking the time with
Thanks,
us
Bill.
This
it's been
afternoon.
Great.
And we'll look forward to being able to get together more often in person.
Sounds good.
All right. All thanks. Right.
Yep.
The God With Us podcast is a ministry of Emmanuel Baptist Church in Hoquiam, Washington. You can find us on the web at ghibc.com and connect with us on Facebook or Instagram at ghibc98550. Thanks for listening, and we'll talk to you soon.